From sweet to elite. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into the Scrambled Eggs podcast. I guess an emergency podcast. We're going to try to squeeze this one in before the Elite Eight game against the Syracuse Orange. Phil, Marquette is still playing, and I was able to watch the game. I was on the road, but I was able to watch the game with the Marquette Club in New York. What did you think? I'm sure you were able to watch the whole game yourself. What did you think as you were watching Marquette dismantle Miami?
Well, first of all, I've got to go back to the, it feels like the fourth time we've done this, but we got to go Ric Flair. That was just a woohoo! That was just a huge game. First of all, my heart thanks Marquette for the gentleness with which it was treated yesterday. And it feels like there really is something to this season. This team is on a mission from God or something. It was just a great game.
I think the ghost of Rick Majerus was hovering above the Miami rim, swatting some shots back. Because, look, I'm not taking anything away from Marquette, because I think enough people do that from other aspects. But Miami played poorly. Miami did not shoot the ball well at all. But I think a lot of that can go towards, you can credit Marquette's defense. I think Marquette was great in the post. And, yeah, obviously Miami was missing a big man, and that certainly hurt. But I don't think that was the difference between winning and losing for Miami personally. They missed a lot of open threes, lot of threes they would probably make during the year. Maybe some of those were contested by Marquette and some of them weren't. But that does, on the other side, Marquette played excellent.
Yeah,
I thought both ends of the floor.
Absolutely, Marquette played excellent. I do have to say, I agree that there were a number of open threes that Miami just didn't convert. But by the same token, that was kind of part of Buzz's game plan, it seemed, was he was going to leave the weak side three open and was going to essentially double Larkin off the screen and force Miami to pass well enough to get the open look and put the shots up. And they did. They were a little rushed, and they didn't go in. So there was a little bit of riverboat gambling there from Buzz. It's one of those things. It's brilliant if it works like it did, but you're also the scapegoat if it doesn't work out. If Miami converts, what were they, 6 of 26 or some insane percentage from three-point land? If they convert
8 of 26.
Even 8 of 26.
And some of that in garbage time, too.
Right, yeah, they hit three there right at the end. So they if they hit even three or four more, especially in the beginning, that game looks a little bit differently. But that's why you credit the coach. And not to mention, the coach, Buzz's strategy was spot on. But the player execution, especially on the defensive end, they rotated so fast and so correctly. I haven't seen a Marquette defense get the weak side rotation that fast in years, I don't think. That's always been a weakness, and it was a real strength last night.
The defensive effort was great. I mean, they really never let let Larkin get off. Larkin had 14 points, and a few of those were towards the end when Marquette had kind of called off the dogs, and it was pretty obvious that they were going to advance. And the rebounding effort was great. Certainly Johnson being out for Miami, you can point to that a little bit, but that doesn't mean Marquette didn't play well. I mean, Trent Lockett, 11 boards. I believe that's his second double-digit rebounding game of the tournament.
Well, and that monstrous putback where nobody bothered to box him out.
Right. Miami may have been missing a guy, but those other guys know how to box out as well. It's not like Reggie Johnson played 40 minutes a game for him. Lockett took advantage of the opportunity there, and he really took advantage all night, having 11 boards. Another solid game for Gardner. He had 14 points. And, of course, the maturation of Vanderbilt only continues as he, it seems ridiculous, the stats I put up, comparing him to Dwayne Wade's run in 2003, but they're so strikingly similar, it was certainly worth bringing up. They're shooting about the same percentage with Wade's points per game just a tad higher.
Yeah, it was a great night from Vander. That step back, fadeaway jumper at the end of the first half, you never would have seen that in the last 2 years. And yet when he hit that shot, or when he put that shot up, I'm like, that's in. It's amazing the 180-degree difference you see in his game. And he never forced anything. And let's be honest, he was guarded by some real athletes. It's mm-hmm. not like Duren Scott was a nobody.
They were the ACC regular season and postseason champs for a reason. That's a solid team.
Right.
They just didn't have their
best
game.
And Scott was ACC Defensive Player of the Year, I think, or at least on their first or second team for the ACC team. So he's a good defender. And Vander, well, I didn't necessarily have his way with him. He got the points in the flow of the offense and could attack the rim. And, yeah, he put up a couple of circus shots, but he was just as steady as you could ask for.
And the team just shot the ball so well, 54% for the game. And I think they started the second half 8 of 9. And that's when, you know, it was pretty obvious that Marquette was really never going to relinquish that lead. And that just seemed like their night. I don't know about you, but it kind of had some flashbacks to, the gap in talent or gap in maybe the point spread wasn't as perceived as it was back then, to the Kentucky game in 2003.
Yeah, I mentioned that a couple of times with the people.
Yeah, it's like just that feeling like, man, we are really killing these guys. When are they going to make a run?
Yeah,
and they just never did.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, Buzz this year has talked about that God put tests in front of you until you pass the test. And I think there were a couple of things in that game last night that we saw that were tests that Marquette previously hadn't passed. The one that really stuck out at me, especially when I watched it the second time around, was midway through the second half. Marquette had a 21-point lead. Miami decided to go full press, and Marquette had one or two turnovers there, and Miami went on like a 7-0 run. Even previously this season, see Pitt, see Wisconsin, see a couple of the other games, Notre Dame, Marquette would not folded a little bit, but would have made that a lot closer. Instead, Marquette then decided to attack the press, which we've not seen, and just started scoring buckets and outpaced Miami. Those were, you know, the fact that they didn't let Miami back in and that they were able to attack the press and score off it with relative ease was some tests passed.
That was, yeah. And who, by the way, whoever started the pass the test hashtag on Twitter, I don't know who that was, but kudos to you. But the press breaking was very refreshing for me, because that's something we've talked about many times, especially in games when Marquette has really gotten beat up, especially the Louisville game, or games where they just played poorly. Teams press them and they haven't played well. And that's just coaching. I mean, they've flipped a switch and they started playing much better last night against Saturday night, or it was Friday night. I've got my days all confused now. The other night against the press, and they were able to break it, and it just looks so smooth, like they've been practicing. Like Buzz took them aside and practiced. All right, look, guys, we do this poorly. Let's adjust, because we know people in the tournament are going to see this tape and see how poor we are against the press, and we're going to see it eventually. And they just looked so prepared to see that.
It almost seemed like a mindset change. It's as if previously they were, when they were dealing with the press, they were playing not to turn it over. And in this case, they were looking to attack it. And, you know, there was a couple of times, and I want to bring this up relative to this. Derek Wilson, a couple of times, just had some ball handling that I didn't know he really possessed, and broke some press, spun out of a double team in the corner and attacked up court. And he had that one crossover on Shane Larkin going to the basket. Derek Wilson, if he actually was willing to take a shot, might not be unsalvageable.
Wilson, you know, I know he has his detractors on Twitter, and you know, maybe for good reason sometimes, because he doesn't score a lot, but at the same time, he's not asked to score a lot. He's not a guy that Buzz says, all right, we got to get 10 points out of him every night. He is just the backup point guard. He's only really asked to go in there, play some defense, not turn the ball over. And just try to set up some guys in the offensive end. And against Miami, he did that. He had 3 assists. He didn't have a turnover. He only played 12 minutes, but he didn't hurt Marquette at all while he was in there.
Well, it just amazes me, and maybe this is because I'm, you know, such a novice at basketball, but it amazes to me that everyone knows that Wilson is not going to shoot. He's not going to really attack and score. So you would think we're playing 4-on-5 on offense, but the offense still seems to flow relatively well. I mean, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy, and you know, and neither one of the point guards was was phenomenal. They were solid. I mean, I think Junior had one assist and three turnovers and, you know, 8 or 9 points. But, you know, they get the job done. They do well enough to let everyone else do what they need to do.
I think they know their role. And to your point, I think Derek Wilson knows his role. He's not going to go in there and play hero ball and start chucking up shots because he knows that'll get him a ticket right back to the bench and he may not see the floor again.
Right.
No, he's going to go in there and he's going to just try to create for others. If he's left wide open, yeah, he'll take a shot. But he's probably not going to shoot because Buzz doesn't ask him to shoot.
Well, and let's – the other thing we need to – knowing your role, the other thing we need to mention is Jamil Wilson struggled early in the season. And now if it's not Vanderbilt, it's Jamil Wilson with the ball and just steady. And some real athletic plays, especially that back-to-back blocks that ended up Marquette getting the rebound and a run out. He has been
The breakout tournament of Vander maybe has overshadowed the breakout tournament of Jamil Wilson, because Jamil has really played three solid games. And he's showing, you know, before the season, a lot of people thought Jamil would be – I thought Jamil would be the best player on the team.
I thought so too.
And he's showing why people thought that, and people mention – you know, I don't know if they call him, you know, look at him as an NBA player right now or in the future, but he shows flashes of why he possibly could be. Because I think when he first showed up as a sophomore, said, look, he has some NBA potential because he has that type of athleticism if he can put it all together. And he has put it all together for these three games. Now, if he has a senior year where he puts it together like that for 25 or 30 games, then he could be looking at a pretty special senior year.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, he's got the jump shot. Was he the only one that hit? He was at least 2 of 3 from three. He may have been 3 of 4.
3 of 4.
Three of four. So he
was
the
only
one.
He hit the only three threes for Marquette. Nobody else even – I mean, the thing is they only attempted 6 as a team.
Well, and they only attempted 1 in the second half, which is just crazy. I mean, you know, I think –
And that's a product of knowing the situation – knowing you're not a great jump shooting team and knowing that just chucking up threes, something you're normally not good at, is a great way to let the other team back in it.
Well, and
they were very patient.
Absolutely. And I think it was Luke Wynn that had some sort of statistic that said Marquette is the number one team in terms of field goal percentage, and they're the ones that get something like 70% of their points from two, and no one was even within like 10% of Marquette. So, you know, it's not, again, this stuff isn't secret, but Marquette knows what it does, and it goes and it does it. That's a mark of a well-coached team able to get what they want without the other team being able to take it away.
I know some people like to focus on the negative. I try to be positive, but I think it's worth addressing. At this point of the tournament, you're not lucky. You know, maybe you've had some luck here and there. Marquette has just simply won three games. And they have played really well, and they absolutely have earned the spot in the Elite Eight. Did they get a little lucky against Davidson? We've touched on that already. Okay, they had one lucky play, but they still earned that win with four big shots. They had a great half against Butler. After one not-so-good half, they earned that game. And then they came out and dominated Miami. If you want to still detract from anything Marquette's done, I guess that's your prerogative. But there's not going to be an asterisk by anything they do. They have absolutely earned this spot. And they should be proud, and they should be celebrated for what they have done to get to this point.
Well, I completely agree, and again, maybe I'm biased or I'm overly sensitive, but I do feel like there's a narrative out in the national media about how, you know, it seems to be a constant refrain of, well, Marquette really doesn't have any talent, but they play really hard, so they win. And, you know, if I'm this team, and it seems to be that they do play with a chip on their shoulder as a result of that, based on the quotes and their play, you know, that's a little insulting. I mean, these guys have talent. And I'll admit, at the beginning of the season, I was kind of going, oh, boy, I don't know. This is kind of a rebuilding year. I'll be glad to just make the tournament. So I'm as guilty as anyone else of underselling the talent on this team.
I think what people forget, it's okay to change your mind about what you thought about a team in November, because players change and players improve.
Well, yeah, if you had told me that Vander and Jamil were going to do what they're doing now, I absolutely would have changed my opinion in November. but it just seems to, and I'm fine with it, I guess. Ultimately, it irks me, you know, kind of the no respect, if I can go Rodney Dangerfield for a minute. But at the end of the day, if the team's using it to fuel their run, all right, keep doubting them. I think it was Buzz said, you know, last night in the post game, he said, when someone asked him about being underappreciated, he said, it's fine, we use it for fuel, we'll be ranked 8th out of 8 tomorrow when they re-rank the Elite Eight teams, and if that's what the team needs, so be it. I'm great, I'm good with that.
Yeah, do whatever. Yeah. Keep doubting them. As long as the games continue to start at 0-0 and Marquette has a chance, I'm fine with that. Now, the game that will start at 0-0 on Saturday will be Marquette and Syracuse. Before we get to Syracuse, any disappointment that, or maybe for some people relief, but for me maybe it's a little bit of a disappointment that we do not get the reunion with Tom Crean?
I will say, I have to, in full disclosure, prior to the Marquette-Miami game, I was 50-50 on wanting to play Indiana. By the end of that Marquette game, I was 176% for playing Crean in Indiana. I wanted that. It felt like the perfect story for this whole thing, and it just felt like the timing was right. But apparently, Crean forgot that Syracuse plays a 2-3, and dropped out. So I'm wildly disappointed that we don't have a chance to face Crean.
Yeah, you know, Indiana didn't leave the arena until 2:30 in the morning. I guess somebody set up a 2-3 zone in the parking lot. But it was a very disappointing effort for Indiana, for a team that was ranked preseason number one. And, yeah, I would have loved to see Marquette go head-to-head with Tom Crean. As I've said before, I respect Crean and thank him for what he did for the program, but that doesn't mean I'm an Indiana fan. I don't cheer for the Hoosiers and want them to do well, necessarily. Or really at all. I always want Marquette to do better than Indiana, and so there is a little bit of satisfaction for me that Marquette has gone at least as far, if not farther, than Indiana. Correct me if I'm wrong, but every year since Crean left,
I believe that is correct. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So, like, I mean, obviously,
except
his first
for one year, I think one year we both made the sweet. Well, this year. Like, we both made the Sweet 16.
So, yeah, as far or farther.
Yes.
Like, the first 3 years, obviously, Crean was rebuilding Indiana, so if you want to throw that out, fine. But the fact is, Marquette's been in the tournament every year since Buzz took over, Sweet 16 each of the last three, and now Marquette will be in the Elite Eight as Indiana goes home. Does it sound like sour grapes? Yeah, maybe. I don't care.
I don't care. I wanted him, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, the end result is at least we've taken the risk of losing to Crean out of the picture, which,
right, because that would have been bitter. That would have hurt.
I would have kicked some puppies and broken glass. It would have been bad.
I mean, you always hate to when the season's over and when you lose that last game, but when it's there's a rivalry aspect to it, and you know someone you would really like to get a one up on. Yeah, that would have stung. And so, thankfully, no matter how Saturday goes, Marquette fans will have to deal with that. So the good news is, you know, basically any rival outside of Louisville at this point, you know, Marquette said, well, we went farther than them.
Right.
So there's that to be said. But as for the Syracuse game, you know, Phil, when this podcast was in its infancy, that was really one of the first big moments we were breaking down was the game at the time against Syracuse. And at that time, of course, Marquette was in a bit of a funk, and we were kind of at that tipping point in the season, whereas Marquette needed a big win. And Syracuse was going to the Bradley Center, and you know, I had my doubts about Marquette being able to beat Syracuse that night. You were a little more optimistic because you loved the matchup. Now, I guess it's about a month later, and now here we are again, now on a neutral floor with a trip to the Final Four on the line. What do you think about the matchup with Syracuse this time around?
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting chess match. First of all, it'll be more than slightly even Syracuse home game. I mean, Syracuse travels well anywhere, and D.C.'s kind of in New York's backyard to a certain extent, so I certainly expect more Cuse fans than Marquette fans. I think the chess match will be interesting because clearly Buzz in the first game found some weakness. Devontae Gardner had the game of his career to date from the high post, was hitting jumpers, kept getting fouled. really just had a heck of a game. So I don't expect that to necessarily happen again. Boeheim's too experienced of a coach to make the same mistake twice. But I do think I have a sneaking suspicion, and I've been on the Steve Taylor bandwagon for a while now, but I do think folks, the Steve Taylor, Jamil Wilson will get some real advantage. If you remember when Usman Barrow was at Marquette, one of the plays he was kind of best at was the alley play, where he just kind of hung down in the alley below the basket in the zone. And I suspect when Q's adjust to Gardner in the high post, it's going to bring their defense up, and there's going to be some alley space available for Jamil and Steve Taylor to maybe make some high-low moves. And I think that's the adjustment Buzz makes. So it'll be interesting to see.
If you need a refresher on that game, of course, Marquette won that game 74-71 the first time around at the Bradley Center. Gardner had a career game, 26 points, including 7-7 from the field and 12-13 from the free throw line. Marquette did get some nice contributions from Wilson in that game. He had 12 points. Although he didn't shoot the ball very well, he was 3-12 from the floor, but he did get those 12 points, most of those coming from the free throw line. And Steve Taylor did get his minutes. I mean, he played 16 minutes, and I guess, like as you were saying, Phil, just he and Wilson are just kind of the perfect matchups against that zone, because in addition to obviously being able to shoot the three against the zone, which of course, as has been well documented, Marquette statistically has not done very well, but although they are doing better in the tournament. But in addition to shooting the three against the zone, of course, it helps to have those guys who are long, who can get in those gaps in the zone, who can hit those little pull-up jumpers. And Taylor had 4 points against Syracuse.
Well, and that was his first real game. Well, that was when we saw the big lineup, the Ox Tool, where we saw Gardner and Otule together. And then Steve Taylor actually got crunch time defensive minutes as one of the wings when we were in the 2-3 zone. So, like I said, I'm a big Steve Taylor fan, but that's the big matchup I see. A little nugget I got from one of the guys at Crack Sidewalks: if Steve Taylor had more minutes, kind of the average player in the NCAA minutes, he would be the 15th best offensive rebounder in the country. So I think that's going to play well against Syracuse's 2-3, because one of the weaknesses of the 2-3 is you're out of rebounding position potentially. So if Marquette's not shooting particularly well, I'm hoping Steve Taylor, Devontae Gardner are getting opportunities for putbacks and easy buckets on the second chance points.
Now, also worth noting from that game, of course, the big moment was Jake Thomas's 4-point play that really kind of turned the game around. Now, you can't count on that happening again.
Well, I would say that's going to be the highlight. I feel very confident saying that is the highlight or the high point of Jake Thomas's Marquette career.
Yeah, and with all due respect to Jake, but yeah, I mean he's a walk-on, and who knows how many minutes he'll play the rest of his career. But he could do nothing; he could not play another minute, and that's that will still be like, hey, everybody will remember Jake Thomas for the big 4-point play in the Syracuse game. But the other thing I wanted to touch on from the previous game, that was really the last significant game for Todd Mayo.
Yes,
Todd Mayo had two big threes in that game. He had 9 points. And it seems like he hit a lot more shots than he did, although he only did hit those two field goals. But those two threes, as you recall, were big in that game.
Yeah, they swung the momentum, and especially in the second half. You know, Jake Thomas kind of – his 4-point play got us back into the game, at least within contention. And then Mayo's shots were big in terms of the one, I think, tied it up for us, and the second one put us in the lead. So he contributed certainly, but – he didn't even play against Miami. So I don't know if it's his head. He hasn't looked.
I'm not necessarily campaigning for more minutes from Mayo. I'm just saying the last time he had a good game was against Syracuse.
Right.
If the situation warrants it, he's playing well, he's in rhythm, would love to see him contribute, because when he's right, his shooting could be a heck of a weapon against that zone. But
right,
it's not
absolutely
working out like it hasn't in the tournament. Well, you don't force it, obviously. You go with the hot hand. You stick with Blue. You stick with Wilson. Whoever else is clicking on Saturday.
Well, and that's the other thing from the game last night is I think Lockett played 35, 36 minutes and Vander played 38 minutes. So, you don't know if it's a question of Mayo's not you know, not right or not there, or it was just, you know, Buzz was riding the hot hand. So it'll be interesting to see, because I think they're going to have to run, you know, the bench was relatively short last night. I think against Syracuse, they're going to have to run more fresh legs out there, because Syracuse is long, athletic, and is going to want to push on the offensive end.
It's certainly worth noting that Syracuse is playing a lot better now than when they played Marquette the first time around. Particularly Michael Carter Williams, his struggles during that stretch when Syracuse had lost whatever it was. It seemed like they had lost like 5 out of 7 games, or they lost whatever 6 or 8 games in the month of February. And his turnovers were up, his scoring was down, but he had a great game against Indiana. I mean, he had 24 points. Obviously he's a good defender. You know, he can be certainly a good defender, and I think he's been a key part of Syracuse's kind of resurgence here in March.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and the other thing that scares me is if Sutherland's shot is on, because I think he's a matchup nightmare. You would, if his shot's on from range, you would theoretically put, if we're playing man, you'd put somebody like Jameel Wilson on him to guard the three, but then he's too big for Jameel to take down low. And so he might go post up. So that's going to be the big matchup. Him and Carter Williams are the two matchup troubles that I see Marquette having to deal with. But I fully expect, like I said, between the Butler game and the Miami game, that's got to be some of the best coaching I've ever seen from anyone, regardless, from Buzz. I fully expect him to have some sort of wrinkle for Syracuse that they're unprepared for.
Sometimes it's just the hot team. Well, it really is. It's just the hot team that wins in March. You know, sometimes
right.
It's not necessarily always the best team. And I think Syracuse and Marquette are actually pretty evenly matched based on their last meeting. Certainly, Syracuse was probably more highly ranked for the majority of the season. Marquette finished stronger, got the share of the Big East title. Marquette got the higher seed for what it's worth in the tournament, but. We've talked before about this. This is a good matchup for Marquette just because they have the personnel that can attack that zone, and Buzz has studied it extensively. And I'm sure, you know, Boeheim's probably trying to figure out maybe another wrinkle that he might want to throw at Marquette to try to figure out a way to, you know, not get as exposed as the Syracuse zone was the first time around. So, you know, both coaches have talked about how they would rather play a team that they don't know. So maybe their opponent does not know what to expect from them, either defensively or offensively. Both coaches have said that, but that's just the way it is. You're just going to have to play a familiar opponent. There's only so many teams left. I mean, there's 8 teams left. 3 of them are in the Big East, so somebody's got to play each other. And I think there's a lot of familiarity there, so I am anxious to see what the coaching adjustments are and what different wrinkle either coach is going to throw into this game to try to get the win.
Well, and I think, you know, whether we're to the prediction point or not, I think this game is going to be a back and forth affair. I don't think it's going to be a blowout either way. I know Syracuse got out to a relatively big lead before the aforementioned Jake Thomas 4-point play, but I really think it's just going to be a close match going back and forth. And unfortunately, I don't think you can put the cardiac medication away. I think it's going to come down to the last minute in this game. I mean, I personally think I have a sense that this team is laser focused, and Marquette's really gonna just play well, and I think Marquette's gonna win, but it's gonna be a close match, I think.
I'm certainly not gonna go against Marquette at this point. I think they're dialed in. It's been 10 years since the last Final Four appearance. I think it's time to go back, and I hope they can be as dialed in against Syracuse as they were against Miami. And if they are, it certainly Syracuse will not play as poorly as Miami did. I think the zone will certainly give Marquette fits, but Marquette has proven an ability to really break down whatever defense a team is going to throw at them. I think Vanderblue is just in a zone right now, and I hope that continues. If Marquette can get another great game from both him and Jameel Wilson, and just as long as one of the big guys, whether it's Otule or Gardner, can step up, obviously it's more likely to be Gardner on the offensive end, then I think we could be very excited on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be, it's going to be fun to watch. And the other thing, the one last thing I'd mention is Syracuse really hasn't been tested from a, you know, from a cardiac standpoint or whatever, to keep going to that analogy. You know, they've had relatively relatively easy games in the tournament, and even before that when they started their run, whereas Marquette's really, you know, obviously the Davidson one is clearly a matter of good clean living and some luck there. So, you know, if it comes down to the end, you gotta put your money on Marquette, having been there and done that before.
The stage will not be too big for Marquette.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's the same arena they played in the other night, so it's nothing new, and it's not a new opponent. And I think they're ready to pass the test one more time. So we'll see what happens. Everyone, I hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy your Easter, and hopefully on Sunday, Phil, hopefully we're going to still be talking about this team and maybe the fourth Final Four berth in Marquette history.
That would nothing would make for a better Easter present than that.
All right, we'll look forward to it. All right, until next time, everyone, thanks for tuning in to Scrambled Eggs. I'm Joe McCann. He is Phil Bush. Hope your Easter weekend is seashells and balloons. We'll catch you next time.